I mean, this idea just sat on me for like 10 years. I mean, honestly, 10 years. And, you know, over that 10 years, I talked to different illustrators and the ideas had kind of been percolating. And when the pandemic happened, all of a sudden it was like, this is the perfect time because I'm not working. Everything shut down. I'd had some illustrations, you know, already paid for because it's so expensive to do this stuff yourself. The idea is to rewrite the Peter Rabbit series, but make it, you know, she was already subversive. Beatrix Potter was already subversive, but make it more in your face.
Coming directly from the horseshoe crowd capital of the world, get a leg up and get ready for the hydrant. And now, the star of the Broadway musical, The Life and Times of Count Chocula, Yum, your host, Jim Cooper.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to The Hydrant. Kirsten Rudberg is with me today. Now, I usually try to tag someone as what they do, but she does so many different things that it would be an injustice to do that. So, first of all, let me just welcome you to the program, and thanks for doing this.
Are you kidding? I love meeting new people and I love talking with anyone in general. So I'm excited to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
It's cool. Kirsten, this will give you some idea of what's going on here. Kirsten's main website is called bitesizedblessings.com. Now, one of the things in Kirsten's past, she is a recent Master's of Divinity graduate. Okay. From New Mexico. And I've got to ask you this question because you wrote it on your website. You said, as a kid, I wondered, how does the world, I can talk. I talk for a living. How does the world really work? Have you come to a conclusion with that?
No.
Good.
Absolutely not. Still trying to figure that out. That's why I do these conversations. I hope by meeting multiple people, I can kind of dig down and get some answers.
Okay.
That's why this is happening.
A little bit of background on this, and correct me if I'm pronouncing this wrong, but Kirsten is a panentheist.
Yeah, panentheist.
Panentheist. Yeah. I had to look that up because I had no idea what that meant. And you know, I started going down the rabbit hole into post-Kantian idealism. And I was like, okay, this is already over my head. So tell us a little bit about what that is before we go down that road.
Okay. I'm not that smart to like go into post-Kantian whatever.
Yeah, we don't need to go that far.
I actively avoid rabbit holes like that, that are that deep.
Smart move.
But a panentheist is, you know, I started seminary, didn't have a religion. I grew up overseas in a Muslim country, but also in Guyana and South America. But then we traveled all over the place when I was a kid, everywhere, a lot to third world countries. So I was exposed to a lot growing up overseas as a kid, especially, of course, cultures and religions. And so I always tell people, I've just seen too much of the world. I met too many exemplary human beings who think differently or worship differently than me. And why would I ever say that any of that is wrong? And I really do have more of a connection with nature as far as nature being sort of this touchstone for me. If I say panentheist, that means that I believe spirit is in everything, you know?
Right.
Even that discarded chewed gum that's underneath the desk where you're sitting. But we won't go into that, Jim, because I know that you actually throw away your gum and you're very responsible. So
That's a large leap of faith right there to think that. It's interesting that you bring that up because I have a very similar belief system in that I consider myself very spiritual, although not religious. So, and that always opens up a lot of debate questions. And I've gotten to the point where if I start talking with someone and they want to know about religion and things like that, I'm like, just think Star Wars and the Force because that's it. We don't need to go any further than that. I have some connection with that. So I definitely the spiritual side of things gets me.
I love that. Yeah. Yes. I agree because, you know, I'm also grew up reading science magazines and I'm always reading about quantum physics and science and consciousness. And, you know, I mean, they proved that the Higgs field exists. So we are moving through. It's almost like when they talk about.
Explain that.
You know,
explain that, the Higgs field.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, the way I can explain it is a goldfish or a fish that's in a lake, for example, it's life is in the lake. Its world is a lake, but it doesn't probably understand that it's moving through water.
Gotcha.
Because that's its environment. We are in somewhat of a similar situation now that they proved that the Higgs field exists. We are moving through this field at all times. Everything is, but we don't perceive it because it's inside us. It's all around us. And so I just read this really fascinating article this past week. If I can go off on a tiny tangent, that, you know, scientists, it was in Popular Mechanics, scientists are trying to figure out consciousness. And it said, hint, you are connected to the entire universe. And, you know, that goes back to Einstein and his, you know, the particles that are connected, spooky action at a distance, and how everything's all connected. So for me, panentheism just seemed to be the natural fit, while also understanding that I'm part and parcel of a whole, just like everyone else. And that, you know, hating other people or judging other people doesn't make any sense because we're all the same thing. We're all just kind of walking through this field, or maybe even emanations from that field, right, experiencing a conscious existence. So, yeah.
And the fact that you read Popular Mechanics makes me love you right from the start. So that's just wonderful. And for those that think that are starting to question, is this going to be a whole religious thing? No, because there's so much more to this woman. Yeah. She's an author. She's written 3 books, The Tale of Two Rabbits, The Nuts Guts, and I love the title of this third one, Boom Chicka Meow Meow, a twisted retelling of the Tailor of Gloucester, is that? Or is it Gloucester? Or?
Yes. It's probably Gloucester.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So she's done that. She has a bunch of other projects. She's done a couple of short films called The Murder of Two. She has her own production company, which is named in honor of Nikola Tesla, which is This Mortal Coil.
This Mortal Coil Productions, yeah. Yes.
Which is, why did you name it that? Not that it's not a cool name, because it's a very cool name, but what prompted that?
Well, you know, Tesla was famous for working with the Tesla coil, right, which if you'll see some spectacular photos if you look it online. It's just astonishing what that man created or envisioned or dreamed that could be possible in this world. But also there's, if you say this mortal coil, it also calls into our existence on this planet and living and our very short lives, considered when you think about the life of the universe.
Right, it's a short
and
long,
yeah. There's like a little bit of a religious connotation too. So it marries my science and religion sort of kind of hopefully dance that I'm doing with both of those disciplines.
When what triggered going for your Masters of Divinity? I mean, was that something that was always there in the back of your mind going back to childhood, or is it something that kind of sparked later on that's like, ooh, I'm going to go do this?
Yeah. Well, it's actually interesting. My whole life, I've been really intrigued and fascinated by folk tales and myth from all over the world. And so, I mean, anywhere I was, I would grab a book, use bookstores, go right to the folk tale section, because I think the way humans make meaning is actually really fascinating, which is why I do my podcast. But the way that humans kind of interact with their world, create meaning out of it, and then take that meaning out into the world to shape it is fascinating to me. I also think it's interesting what happens in liminal spaces. And a lot of these folk tales and myths, the people have these experiences that they can't quite explain in these liminal spaces. And it's kind of this really interesting space where humans can create meaning, but possibly even connect with, you know, another dimension, because they, you know, scientists are like, oh, in string theory, there's 11 dimensions, but 6 or 7 of them are wrapped so tightly, we can't access them. And so what is that liminal space that people, whether it's through dreaming, whether it's through trance, whether it's through taking an entheogen like mushrooms or ayahuasca, how are these messages and these experiences that we're having in these spaces then being brought back to create meaning in our world? And so for me, what's exciting is I went to seminary because, you know, and I took intro to Islam, I took intro to Buddhism, I took everything, God and sexuality in the Hebrew Bible. And I love to learn. I'm like someone who will never get enough of going to school, even though I can't afford it. But it's like, I was just fascinated by the subject and I just felt called to do it. Because I wanted to be steeped in learning about other cultures and religions more deeply.
Right. Right. Two things popped in my head. One, just to amplify this, because it's one of the projects we hadn't gotten to yet, is that Kirsten does have a podcast that's been out there for a while, has lots of episodes, and it's called the Bite-Sized Blessings Podcast. So now you know where the website name and her email address come from. The other thing that kind of popped in my head when you were talking was, you have some credence or some belief then that there actually is a metaverse.
Oh my God, what don't I believe in? Because it's more exciting to believe in everything. I mean, it's, if you look at different cultures and religions throughout the world, for example, art in stone, pictographs, petroglyphs from all over the world, let's just use that. And there are common motifs all over. So where are these people when they went into trance? Where are they getting this information from? Where are they getting this, these common images that they're then inscribing into stone? And so, you know, for me, it goes back to the Higgs field that possibly these images or these messages or these impressions that these people are getting, even ancient peoples, are coming from some common field that, you know, we're hopefully going, you know, I love science so much, but it's so reductive and we don't allow for subjective experience in science, which is such a bummer for me because I think there's so much more potential if you allow other ways of interpreting the world to come in. Now, I also understand that then that defeats, you know, the objective, like kind of, oh, what do we observe? And how is this, you know, how do we get these same observations over and over so that we can understand that this is a rule and that it's something that happens every time? But I think there is something to be said for, you know, for example, when people take, you know, mushrooms, let's just say, or ayahuasca, and they see the same things or they have the same experiences, they have to be going somewhere or going into a space that exists for everyone. I don't know if that helps.
Yeah,
I might have gone on.
No, I understand what you were saying, and I can agree with a lot of it and understand a lot of it. The thing that pops in my head is, I get older, you know, because we all get so tunnel focused with who we are in terms of humanity, and you know, human beings being the pinnacle of evolution and that kind of thing. But as we get older, I am more and more convinced that we're like a very small chapter of all the life that's been on this planet. I mean, you look at things like Stonehenge, you look at things like the statues on Easter Island, the faces. Sorry, someone was here before us that did this thing. Now, whether it was a human form or some other form, or, you know, it was part of the folks that are sitting out in the middle of the desert with their Pan Am flight bags waiting for the mothership to come down, whatever it happens to be, you know, it's just so.
Oh dear.
It's and I have to say, I stole that line from Rick Overton, who's a great stand-up comic, but it's so apropos. Being open to a lot of these different thoughts and ideas has something that has grown on me over the years and continues to blossom a little bit, which is why when I was reading some of the things that you do, I was like, oh, this is interesting, because there's a lot of stuff here that I can cater to, and it's cool stuff. So as a master's, having the master's of divinity, what do you do with that?
Oh gosh, my mother would like to know the same answer.
Sorry, Mom.
Oh gosh. Okay. So basically I graduated in the, like kind of as the pandemic just began in 2020. And I'm sure, as you can imagine, everything was constricting. And one of my internships was with the Interfaith Leadership Alliance of Santa Fe. So I worked with about 33 different faith organizations, kind of as all of their Gal Friday, you know, for all of them. But I got to witness and see what was going on during the year when I worked for them with all the different churches and synagogues, et cetera. And I'm sure, as you can imagine, that when the pandemic hit, everything was closing down. Those structures, those, you know, churches, they really struggled with how to still cater to their worshipers. And so I got to witness a lot of interesting stuff that was also a little, I mean, it needed to happen, but a lot of them didn't pivot very smoothly. But that being said, there was, I mean, no jobs whatsoever, because everybody was kind of freaking out, trying to figure out what to do. And, you know, that I graduated in June, and that those next few months is when the podcast was born, because, you know, I was, all these people on my social media were just lonely and isolated and scared and fretting. And the energy was so intense. And I thought to myself, okay, what would make me feel better? Like, what do I want to hear? And I've always been someone that people come and tell their strange stories to, and I'm not sure why. But I thought, oh my gosh, you know, I love those stories from people. Maybe other people will love those stories. Right. And so I reached out to my cohort first from seminary. And I said, do you guys have any inexplicable or magical experiences you want to tell? And, you know, they all said, yes. And I want to tell them. And so, you know, now I'm up to episode 160, and it's, you know, I talk to everybody. I've talked to atheists. I've talked to scientists. I've talked to therapists. I've talked to so many different people. And, you know, even the atheists said, hey, you know, I don't think this was miraculous, but if you want to call it, label it, yes, this event was kind of singular. And so it's really just, again, born out of my desire to kind of figure out how people create meaning. Like, how do they have these strange, maybe crazy experiences that they, like ghosts or dying three times and coming back and what happened when they were dead? You know, how do they create meaning out of these experiences and then take that into their life?
Right.
Like, go out into the world. So yeah, I mean, the answer is nothing. I'm doing nothing because honestly, you know, also like most churches, they want a Unitarian Universalist minister or a Methodist minister. Right. And so I'm kind of operating outside of the whole structure of religion. I have considered creating my own church, which would be super irreverent and somewhat strange. And hopefully, I mean,
but I'm sure has been done before many, many times. Yeah.
My tagline was going to be, we put the fun in fundamentalism. And so it was going to be all about having fun and bringing people together to have, you know, a good time, not so serious.
Yeah, that would be cool. Let's talk a little bit about your books.
Okay.
What was, because these are kind of, you use the word irreverent, these are semi-irreverent books. So let's talk about their genesis a little bit. Why write these? And let's talk about what they are.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm basically rewriting the Beatrix Potter canon. Mm-hmm. I did check. I'm allowed to do this. And so, I mean, this idea just sat on me for like 10 years. I mean, honestly, 10 years. And, you know, over that 10 years, I talked to different illustrators and the ideas had kind of been percolating. And when the pandemic happened, all of a sudden it was like, this is the perfect time because I'm not working. Everything shut down. I'd had some illustrations, you know, already paid for because it's so expensive to do this stuff yourself. The idea is to rewrite the Peter Rabbit series, but make it, you know, she was already subversive. Beatrix Potter was already subversive, but make it more in your face because, you know, the front of the first book, which is a rewrite of Peter Rabbit, is a skinned rabbit. Right. And it's meant to confront the reader with environmental degradation, human trafficking, sweatshops, all these cultural and societal ills or travesties, but do it in a more overt way. Right. Because, you know, and it's going to be a 13-book series, and your little sci-fi heart will be so happy because as it progresses, it's going to end up having a sci-fi bent. But basically the question is, you know, why do we keep making the same mistakes over and over, knowing that these choices we're making are devastating for forests, for the ocean, for other people? Why do we keep doing the same thing? And as my mom said the other day, she read my third book, Boom Chicka Meow Meow, which is a rewrite of The Tailor of Gloucester, shall we say. And it deals with sweatshops.
Well, you know the answer to your question. Why do we keep doing it over and over again?
Because we suck.
Because people love money.
Yes, yes. Oh, of course.
Yeah, that's the whole reason for doing
it. Yeah. And they're inherently lazy and they do what's easy. But all this is also taking away from the fact that a lot of people's lives are struggle and they're just trying to survive.
See, and I would canter to that more than people being lazy. Are there lazy people? Sure there are. But I think there's a lot of people who are discouraged from going forward. And I'll give you a good example. I have a very good friend who wrote, who I worked with to write a series of books. She had created a baby traveling kit that you could take traveling with you, and had, and it was great product, and she did a wonderful job with it, and she created these characters. And she and I got together because we'd worked previously and hammered out stories and who the characters were and what their, you know, characteristics were. And she got 2-3 years into this, and Disney came out with something very similar, even to where the characters looked a little bit similar. But they have a army of lawyers. What's she going to do? She can't break herself. So a lot of people, I think, just get discouraged by saying, why bother? I'm not going to win anyway. Yeah. And I think that's more dangerous than anything else, is that you can't get discouraged. You've got to have the faith in yourself to just keep pushing forward at whatever it is that you're doing.
Absolutely. I agree. And it's, you know, it does seem, not that we're going to talk about this very much, but it does seem that intellectual property, there are all these people who are unable to have their own individual, like, creative ideas. So they take from other people. And, you know, a friend of mine said, oh, you should take that as a compliment. But if they're outright stealing someone's idea to make money and not, you know, give them any money or any attribution, then that's problematic.
Thus, we have AI.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is a whole other podcast, and I am terrified of.
I've been on so many podcasts, and this comes up, and it's like, how long are we going to do this? I mean, we could be sitting here talking about this for hours. So, all right, yeah, we'll put that for another episode somewhere along the line. So go look for the books.
You can buy them through me, through my website, but they're also in George R.R. Martin's bookstore in Santa Fe.
Wow, that's cool.
Easley Books. So, yeah, I'm going to have a big book release party for the third book at the end of April, because I'll be in Santa Fe.
Okay, so go to Bite-Sized Blessings to get the book, because they're out there and you can order them there. Or is it through Mortal Coil Productions?
No, no, it's through Bite-Sized Blessings, but they also have them on George's website too.
Cool.
So yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about, let me ask you some of these silly questions.
Okay, deal. I'm in.
Because this is always the strange part of the interview. What song should play every time you walk into a room?
Oh, good Lord. This is a great question, because I love music so much. And I'm like kind of torn between the blues and, okay, I'm going to say It's a Wonderful World.
Okay.
Yeah.
The Louis Armstrong version.
Do you want me to, the Louis Armstrong version. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Just because it's so gorgeous, and it's such a great reminder, you know, that this world, I'm optimistic that this world is a beautiful place.
Right. What pizza topping best represents you?
Yummy. I just had pizza for dinner last night. So, you know what? I would say kind of a delicious jar of olives, because they're like a little, you know, chopped up. So a little salty, because I am a little salty, and I'm a little briny. And, you know, if you cut me up into little pieces, I make, I'm delicious.
Are you stuffed with pimento or?
Oh, ooh. Yeah, I'd say pimento, because, I mean, I do love olives with blue cheese, but I don't know if that would be very good on the pizza. Oh, yeah.
What breed of dog would you be?
Ooh, let's see. Some sort of, I think a Schipperke, because they're highly manipulative and smarter than their humans. And so I think they're so cute. They're low riders. So they low ride against the ground. And you're like, oh, that unassuming dog is, you don't have to be threatened by it. And meanwhile, it's like operating behind the scenes like Smithers in,
you know, plotting your demise. Okay. Gotcha.
Yes, totally. Yeah.
Gotcha. What is your favorite curse word?
Oh my gosh. You know, this is so ridiculous, because it'll just pop out and I won't think about it, but I say Shiza a lot. And yeah, I only because I love the way it sounds, and I love that it's not what people expect. And I love that there's like, I think it has that Z kind of sound in the middle, and there's that really amazing growl at the end. So it's super satisfying for me.
Who would play you in a movie about your life?
It's so interesting, because years ago, about my life. I mean, I don't know. Someone unhinged? Is there someone unhinged?
Oh, there's lots of people unhinged. Out there.
Well, what's weird is I've had so many people tell me, which I don't agree with this at all, that I look like Emma. Emma, what's her name?
Watson?
I can't think. No, not Emma Watson. It's Emma. She was in La La Land.
Stone.
I can't think of her name right
Emma
now.
Emma Stone?
Emma. Yes. I've had so many people say, my God, you look like Emma Stone. And I'm like, what? I don't think that's true. But I don't know, someone who's had a weird life, because growing up overseas was certainly strange.
See, given your personality, the one that pops in my head would be Melissa McCarthy.
Oh my God, I love her. Heart Melissa McCarthy. As a matter of fact, when I just saw her amazing movie about the superheroes, I think it's on Amazon or Netflix. Yep. I can't remember. I was like, oh my God, I want to be in that movie. And I actually am a screenwriter. And so my Murder of Two on animated on YouTube is a comedy. They're both super, okay. They're all super short episodes, like 2 minutes. But I thought that is the movie I would write. So I'm right there with you. Amazing. Amazing.
That's cool.
Yeah. Thank you. That's a huge honor. Thank you.
You're welcome. What advice would you give yourself at age 15?
Oh my gosh. I love that. I love that question because I was just asked it and it came to me in a flash that what I would say was I would approach myself. I would give myself a huge hug, like a deep hug. And I would say, it's going to be okay. And that's not really advice, but just kind of a reassurance that everything's going to be okay.
Yeah. No, absolutely on the mark. This is going to open up a can of worms. I can feel this coming. What is something you're obsessed with?
Gracious. Okay. What kind of obsessed? Like crack addiction or something where I'm just
anything.
Like, I can't get enough of this or okay.
Yeah, whatever you want to go with.
I'm obsessed with. So books. I cannot get enough of reading, and so much so that when I was in seventh grade, I won the contest where I read 96 books in the school year and got put on the front page of the paper. The next year in eighth grade, I read 120 books. The library, my junior high library, ran out of tests for me. I had to start reading books and creating tests for future people who competed in this. And then, you know, because I was in the library every single second I could get in there, they had an intervention and I got pulled out of chemistry class one day, walked into the guidance counselor's office. The guidance counselor was there along with my parents. And the guidance counselor basically said, your daughter's not developing socially. It's problematic. They banned me from the library. I could no longer go in the library. And I was forced to go to recess and lunch. Well, I was, yes. And so, I mean, it destroyed me. It destroyed me. So when I graduated, here's what happened though. When I graduated from eighth grade, I got nominated as class bookworm. When I graduated from high school 4 years later, I got nominated as class clown. So in those intervening years, when I was banned from the library, I somehow found a weird voice, maybe a little bit of an eclectic voice, but apparently a funny voice. Because I won with a landslide voting. And it's what I needed, even though it destroyed me when I was banned from the library at that moment in eighth grade, it allowed me to sort of discover another part of who I was. Because I was hiding. I was hiding in that library. There's no doubt. But yes, I had to learn how to, it was sink or swim. I walked into that first recess, you know, during lunch, and I thought I was going to throw up all over the place. But three girls took pity on me, and I became friends with them. And then after that, it just branched out.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yes.
Okay. So we're going to talk about books because I have the same obsession.
Okay.
If you put on the sorting hat, which Hogwarts house would you be assigned to? Ravenclaw, Slytherin, Gryffindor, or Hufflepuff?
Well, the skipper key part of me would be assigned to Slytherin. But the I would say, you know, oh my God, that's a hard one because, you know, Gryffindor I always associate with like right and true path and doing what's needed despite the and I have that part to me, which, you know, a former partner in the past was like, nobody wants to be with a saint. And I was like, I agree with that. And that was like not a compliment. I really struggle with like how to figure out I don't know, not be so rigid in that way. But I would say, because I love to learn and I would love to go to college for the rest of my life, Hufflepuff. Like, I really would like to be in school for kind of like ever.
See, and that to me is kind of the one of the few flaws in those four houses, is that you've got definitive characteristics for Gryffindor and Slytherin, but Ravenclaw and Hufflepuff, you know, Hufflepuff kind of leans toward the more studious, but you don't really know what personality those two, especially Ravenclaw, personalities those houses have. So it's something someone else can spend their time analyzing. What would you like to eat for your last meal?
Oh, good God in heaven. Oh, dear. Because one of my things is I just absolutely love food so much. And not just food per se, but I buy cookbooks that have the history behind the evolution of food and the history of where these foods came from. And I love, you know, like Edna Smith, her cookbook. Right. She's no longer alive, but it's just incredible to learn the history of place and history of place in cooking and identity. I just find that utterly captivating. You know, I might never make something from that cookbook, but just reading about someone's life and how they created these things based on their experience is just amazing for me. So a last meal, this is like so unfair. It's like so utterly unfair.
Skip it.
So,
we don't have to have it.
I would say probably a delicious, delicious plate of curries from India and Pakistan, you know, with different tasting from, because the curries and the recipes over there are all different based on region. Right. So maybe a smattering of different curries from all over India, a delicious, you know, side of raita and some sauces and then chapatis, bread to like eat it all up. I would love that. It would be amazing because you're basically tasting the world.
Right.
And you're tasting the history of those places and what grew there and what didn't grow there and how it affected how that dish evolved. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That worked. I think I know the answer to this. What Looney Tunes character best represents you?
I love Yosemite Sam. Because I say that every once in a while, I'll catch myself saying, my biscuits are burning. My biscuits are burning because I.
And it shows my depth of obsession with Looney Tunes. And I know exactly what you're talking about. So.
I just sometimes when, you know, I'm like in the middle of a problem or in the middle of trying to figure something out and I can't figure it out, but I feel like there's a time crunch and I need to get this thing solved. I'll just unconsciously say, my biscuits are burning, my biscuits. And then I'll catch myself and say, well, that's odd. Like it's my spirit just kind of like channels Yosemite Sam. And I'm like, I got to figure this out. I got to get this solution. And I just love how he's in the same predicament so very much. And those biscuits, they are a burning. And I'm like, why doesn't he ever learn?
Never.
Why doesn't he figure it out?
All right, let's do an either or thing. I'll give you two things and you just tell me what your preference is.
Okay.
Passenger or driver?
Driver, because I have serious control issues. Just going to admit that out there. Yeah.
So does everybody else. Summer or winter?
Ooh. I love summer because the days are long and there's more room for adventure because the light just lasts so much longer than winter. It's like a time to play and be exuberant and kind of like just be out in the world. It's very joyful. But I do love winter as well because that's the time for dreaming and like envisioning new things and kind of hibernating. So, but I have to say summer. There's just that energy is just so potent.
Right.
Growth. Yeah.
Bananas or watermelon?
Ooh, watermelon. Oh my God. Partially because they're so delicious. And I'm talking about watermelon with the seeds that hasn't been hybridized and ruined. Because as a kid, it was like when you got a slice of that watermelon and it was just so flavorful and delicious and rich, that meant a picnic was happening and a social event was happening.
Right.
And there was like fun to be had. You could run around, play with your friends. There was usually something happening and it was going to be a good day.
We all summer long, when that kind of watermelon's available, we buy one and cube it up and keep it in the refrigerator all the time. And you just go by and grab a cube and it's just like the best thing in the world.
Yeah. So,
toilet paper, over or under?
Oh my God. I think under, because I literally don't understand why you do over. It just seems so not intuitive. I mean, I don't know. It just, well, also visually, it's not as pleasing for me. Okay. Visually, like pulling it from underneath, there's just something about the movement of the.
Right. I got you. Bewitched or I Dream of Jeannie?
I don't know. I like I Dream of Jeannie because she's just so, I don't know. There was something completely maddening about her character. I mean, I it's disturbing for me to watch that show because she's endlessly doing these things that cause all this angst and all these problems and there are pitfalls and it just drove me insane. But then when someone would come and fix it and there would be some resolution, it was really satisfying.
That's about the most in-depth analysis I've ever heard of I Dream of Jeannie. So that's good. I like that. Which superpower would you rather have, invisibility or pamnesia, which is the power to remember and recall absolutely everything one thinks, feels, encounters, and experiences?
Oh, gosh. You know, invisibility, because I don't think I'd want all that weight in my brain. I know that there are people in this world that have that ability.
Right.
They literally, you know, you give them a date, they're like, oh, that's what happened on the day. They can remember everything. And for me, that just seems like such a huge burden.
Right.
Like, you could never forget anything. And I do find that there's a lot of gifts in forgetting things. But invisibility, again, the skippery part of me is like, ooh, what kind of mischievousness can I get into?
And that's my choice, is because the propensity for mischief is so much greater with invisibility.
Yes.
So
it's absolutely. Yeah.
Would you rather go skydiving in a rainstorm or climb the antenna at the top of the Empire State Building on a windy day?
Both of those make me want to throw up because I have a massive fear of heights. I mean, like almost paralyzing.
Yeah, both would kill me. Both would kill me.
Yeah. Yeah. If I was doing the skydive tandem, can we have that little caveat there? Okay. I would do that because I am completely enthralled with storms and rain and the chance. I mean, so if you're, there are all different kinds of storms, but if you're in a storm, and I wouldn't advise this, I don't know why a plane would even fly into a storm that has a potential for tornadoes. I mean, can you imagine how many times you might potentially be thrown up by an updraft? It could be exciting. You could potentially like see a lot of things that other people hadn't seen.
You just wouldn't be able to tell them about it because you'd be ripped to shreds.
Yes, totally. Yes. But it'd be an interesting way to go out.
Okay. Would you rather give up your cell phone for a month or bathing for a month?
Oh, my cell phone. I mean, I have a love-hate thing and I'm always misplacing it. And sometimes I have to message my brother with my mom's phone and say, hey, can you find my phone? And he takes a picture of where it is. And he's like an hour away. Because, I mean, and I never have any noises on. I don't want to be notified. I don't want to be bothered by the world. Yes, I'll look at it probably a little too much, but I don't really need it.
Right.
I don't care for it in most respects. So yeah, I would say that's my answer. Yeah.
Would you rather have telekinesis, the ability to move things with your mind, or telepathy, the ability to read minds?
Telekinesis.
Okay, so you're carrying. Okay,
again, yeah, if I'm an invisible skipper key and I'm like, can move things with my mind,
God.
It's like super exciting to like mess with people.
What have I unleashed here? Would you rather have to eat only liver for the rest of your life or be forced to watch an episode of Keeping Up with the Kardashians every day?
Oh my God. Okay. So yes, I agree that show is a blight upon humanity. But I hate liver so much that I would watch it and then use it to just judge the remainder of humanity.
I like that analysis. I think I would definitely jump on board with that. Would you rather be able to remain immortal or be able to fly?
Oh, immortal. Because again, hate heights. But immortal, you know, I really do think that if I was immortal, I could live longer, obviously. Witness the mistakes that humanity makes over and over again. And maybe it would allow me to become a more potent force for change, you know, and maybe swaying people's opinions or getting them to think about the world in a different way. So definitely immortal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would you rather have whatever you are thinking appear in a bubble above your head for everyone to read, or have absolutely everything you do be live streamed for everyone to watch?
Well, I do think my life is hilarious. So I would, but also desperate and conniving and a little bit sad and stressful. So I definitely don't want people to see what I'm thinking, because I mean, Shiza's like the least of what I say. And I mean, I am not perfect. I judge people till the cows come home. If people saw what I thought of various things happening in the world, they would be probably aghast and maybe need to get some major therapy. But I also, but you know, doesn't? I can be very small-minded and super judgmental. And yeah, so I'd rather have my life be live streamed so that they can see the positive things that I do in my life as well. And understand that I'm human.
I was just about to say, human. How about that? You're a human being.
Yes. And I like being sloppy. So then people can see me just being sloppy sometimes.
That's cool. This was so much fun. Thank you for doing this. Appreciate it.
Concur. I loved every minute. Jim, thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure.
This was really, really fun.
My pleasure. If you want to know more about Kirsten, go out to bitesizedblessings.com. And from there, you can go into all sorts of different worlds that she'll take you in. And it's worth the trip. Trust me about it. Because when I first went there, it was like, oh, I've got to talk to this person. So thank you again. And thank you for listening. And we'll see you again next time on The Hike. Hey, thanks for hanging out with us on The Hydrant. The Hydrant announcer is Allison Steele. For outstanding VO coaching and voice acting services, visit Allison at allisonsteele.com. That's Allison with a Y and Steele with no E at the end. Shoot me an email with any comments, questions, worthwhile recipes at bigdog@jimcoopervo.com. This episode, copyright 2024, by Jim Cooper VO and Nat Landcore Audio, which is solely responsible for its content. No reproduction by writing, recording, reposting, smoke signals, AI voice loading, Morse code, or any other electronic or manual recording method known to man is allowed without prior written consent. Come back and play with us next week as the steady stream of outstanding guests continue at The Hydrant.